This is Foresight Matters with David Cloke.
Hello and welcome. The UK utilises a range of principles and processes to determine how its public agencies and society in general plan for, respond to, and recover from a broad range of emergencies. Key to this approach has been the concept of integrated emergency management, which defines each stage as anticipate, assess, prevent, prepare, respond, and recover. However, there is a school of thought, prompted by the response to floods and observed during the global pandemic, that suggests there's a need to include stabilisation within this process. So, if you're an academic in this field, a practitioner, researcher, or have a professional interest in emergency and business continuity planning, then this is the podcast for you. Welcome to Foresight Matters. So today's date is the 19th of May, 2021. 2 days before, on the 17th, a range of relaxation measures were introduced by the UK government. And as a result, we are going to be looking very, very carefully to see if these relaxation measures will have any effect on the number of cases of infection in the UK. Also, there's concern at the moment with the Indian variant. Some good news has come through today from government and the Prime Minister to suggest the efficacy of the vaccines that we are using is good. It's high against dealing with this, which is absolutely fantastic. So just to give you a bit of context before we start our podcast today, if you'd like to get in contact, I would love to hear from you. Good old-fashioned email. Well, I think Hugh is email old-fashioned. I'm not really quite sure, but
it does feel
like it, doesn't it? David@foresightsolutions.net. You can check us out on Twitter. We have a Twitter feed. The handle is @foresightsol. That's Foresight S-O-L. And use the hashtag Foresight Matters Podcast. Really would love you to use that and get in contact. Check out our Facebook and LinkedIn pages. Just search for Foresight Solutions and find our logo.
This is Foresight Matters with David Cloke.
So let's get on to the subject of stabilisation. Now I've worked in emergency management for, I think it's over 20 years now, and it's been a guiding principle in, you know, pretty much all that we do. This particular process, this cyclical process that we have used, that really covers from anticipation, risk assessment, response, and recovery, as a planning cycle. And I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Hugh Deeming from HD Research Limited, who has been a great advocate of an addition that should really be included or potentially be included in future thinking, and has written a briefing note in 2020 discussing this particular option, this particular area called stabilisation. So Hugh, hello to you.
Hello, David. Thanks for having me.
Very, very welcome. Before we get cracking on the conversation, tell us a bit about Dr. Hugh Deeming. Tell us a bit about HD Research Limited.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm an academic, but my history goes back a long way. I was a mature student at the age of 37. I went to university for the first time.
That sounds familiar.
Before that, Royal Army Medical Corps for a few years after school, and then 12 years in the Devon Cornwall Police, roads policing, ARV, and rapid intervention. At the age of 37, I decided I wanted to do something else, so left and took myself off to university, where I did a geography degree, best subject in the world. And whilst I was there, one of my supervisors got some European funding to look at for a big European project, a hazards-related project. And I asked, because of work he'd already done on flood mapping and flood vulnerability, I asked him if he could fund a PhD, use that money to fund a PhD if I worked on the project. And he said yes. So for the next 3 years, I did a PhD looking at community resilience to storm surge hazard around the UK coast, looking at social capital and the bonding, bridging, and linking networks and the way they develop community resilience to low probability, high consequence storm surge hazards. When I finished that 2008 now, that led into another European project, again looking at community resilience and around Europe. As the UK, within the UK, a university there within Northumbria University, I worked in Cumbria, and our focus there was looking at community resilience in relation to coming back from or being resilient to the 2005 and 2009 floods. So this was 2011 to 2015. We developed a framework of community resilience, which has been published, and that finished in October 2015, and then December the 6th, 2015, Storm Desmond. And because I'd been working in Cumbria and they knew me, I was asked to come in and write their debrief reports for the recovery, the acute phase and the recovery phase. Now, that was over 18 months, the recovery phase report. Looking at the way initially the authorities had dealt with, the responders had dealt with the actual event itself, but then looking at the longer term recovery and what was needed for that to get back to some semblance of a normal. This was after two other extreme floods. Yeah, this was the third. Bang, bang, bang for a lot of households. Do you recover from something like that?
It's an interesting question in its own right, isn't it, about recovery? It is. I'm sure it links very closely to stabilisation.
Absolutely. And one of the issues that came out of Desmond was the sheer scale of the infrastructure damage. And that was, so there's the highways, Cumbria Highways dealt with 1,234 damaged assets, a nice sequential number, but 1,234 assets that all had to be risk prioritized and repaired. That meant that some of the stuff just wasn't going to be fixed. They had so many soldiers in the tin, they just couldn't fix it straight away. So what happened, instead of a recovery, there was a stabilization process, and bridges and some roads were closed, and the Harris barriers went up, and that was it. Now, for the community that's affected by that, that's not recovery. That's a closed road. That's stopping us from getting around. So the important factor there, you are preventing risk, you are preventing further damage, you're preventing further harm, you're stabilizing a degrading infrastructure and stopping it from getting worse. But also the concept of stabilization gives you a way to communicate with the population that you're not doing nothing. You're doing something. This is stabilized. We know you're not recovering, but we have to do this. We have to go through a stabilization phase whilst we deal with everything else.
So the concept of stabilization, it's a kind of an in-between stage then? Is that what you're suggesting?
I mean, the definition that Jonathan Burgess and I came up with was the exercise of interim control following an incident in order to increase public safety and to mitigate the risk of secondary impacts occurring. So that's very much the physical thing is held together temporarily. But what a stabilization narrative it lets you do, in which I use the example of Bell Bridge in Cumbria. Bell Bridge was damaged in Storm Desmond, and then Harris barriers went up. You're not allowed to cross it. And then on January the 6th in 2016, it collapsed. So it was quite right. It had been closed. So that was closed. The local community lost their communication with the far side of the bank. So what you had to do was have the Harris barriers, but also a communication strategy that spoke about how long it was going to take, what the challenges were, what does your new bridge, what do you want it to look like? All this conversation occurs within a stabilization phase, and then you start, once those plans are in place, you can really start to recover.
So do you think, you know, there's a couple of questions for me that sort of spring to mind. First of all, in terms of, you know, this naturally fitting in at that time, did it with the authorities and with the communities, did it sort of fit in? Was it kind of something where those that needed to respond to do this, did they sort of accept it as a sort of a natural thing as part of recovery? Or did they say, well, actually, we've got to make this something deliberately in between response and recovery?
They saw it in hindsight. At the time, it was recovery.
Okay.
But looking at it in hindsight and looking at it with a couple of us thinking about it and putting a label on it, it's putting a label on it. I mean, this is the thing about academia and theory and concepts. They're just labels. They're not right. but they can be very useful. And if you can frame something as a concept, as a new concept, it can sometimes just, everything just slots into place. Mm. And that is pretty much what happened in Cumbria, that stabilization slotted into place after the fact.
Mm. So a follow-up question.
But it's been taken forward now.
Yeah. So a follow-up question is that stabilization, in your example, is very much about the fabric of society, the place, as your example.
Yep.
Do you see a merit, as you do with recovery, where you look at community recovery? You know, and we're obviously going to see this, you know, in the latter stages of recovery within, or even current stages of recovery within the pandemic event. Do you see stabilization as needing to focus not just on the place, but also the people in terms of managing their expectations and getting them ready for recovery, if that's sort of the correct analogy?
Absolutely. Mm. It's more honest. And I'm going to be very personal now. I mean, I had a phone call this morning from my mum. She wants to collect some money to put up to plant a copse, a little project, a copse fairly local to here, in memory of my sister. My sister died 40 years ago. So think about what's happened in this last year. Those 127, however many thousands of people have died, how many thousands of families have lost loved ones in this last year, they're not thinking about recovery. Recovery is going to be very painful and very long. So if we're thinking about a period when we're all in masks, we're still distancing, that's not recovery for anybody. That's we're stabilizing in the face of a disease that can come back at us.
Hmm. It's interesting when you talk about this sort of phase of stabilization, whether it is, you know, something physical or something that's related to organizations or related to communities. I think now you are starting to see the emergence of practical applications. And as I've spoken to you before, I've been very fortunate to be working at a major national infrastructure construction project on business continuity over the last sort of 18 months. And when the pandemic came in and, you know, started to really produce its effects, after seeing your presentation, I thought, we're going to go into stabilization here. We're not going to, you know, we're responding, and there are certain measures to really cut down site attendance and essentially rapidly going into a new normal. Really, I mean, does that make sense?
It does.
You know, rapidly going into this new normal where, you know, on a construction site, a really major construction site, lots of norms just got placed upside down. Yeah. Have you seen any sort of examples during the pandemic where that has happened, where you've seen people had to sort of quickly address it? I mean, there's obviously things like face masks and social distancing, but is there anything else that sort of that you've observed? Because I've certainly seen it in the workplace that I've been involved in.
I have to admit, as a self-employed researcher stuck in the Yorkshire Dales, it's difficult to actually see things physically happening in front of me. But I mean, I'm very conscious of the fact that lockdowns into reopening, lockdowns into partial reopening, lockdowns into different rules, it's very, very short period new normals. And then there's another new normal on top of that, and then another new normal on top of that. And at the end of this, in a year or so, we will be coming back to a proper new normal without these contingencies, without these measures in place, these countermeasures in place.
So do you think that there is space then? And we'll get on to you know, how this could be implemented, what it could look like in the future. Do you think that there's space to use this sort of language, you know, the term stabilization, as freely, even though it's perhaps not part of a formal system yet? But do you think that would add to public woe and worry if you say that actually we're stabilizing at the moment? You know, we want the green shoots of recovery. We're working towards recovery. But at the moment, you know, we got to stabilize. And this is the important thing. And I haven't heard that term too much during this pandemic, or in fact, in a lot of emergencies, ones that I've been involved in response to and more broadly. But do you think that there is now an opportunity to enter into the sort of public psyche, a narrative around what stabilisation is going to look like, particularly for longer term events such as pandemics and a resurgence of different variants and waves?
That's an interesting one, because I mean, as I think about it, I've got my stabilisation head on, and I'm looking back at the last year, and I'm thinking there are certainly periods in that last year where it's absolutely appropriate. But now, as we're getting towards high vaccination rates, we're doing pretty well. We've, as you've said earlier on, the it looks like the vaccination is safe against the Indian variant. So there are shoots of recovery here for us, but it's still fragile, which is the territory for stabilization. Fragility is the territory for this stabilization concept. But I think that without a shadow of a doubt, I think we should be thinking about using it within the integrated emergency management cycle as much as anything, for the two reasons now, for the actual physical infrastructure and for this process of a disease, dealing with a pandemic.
Let's take you back to Cumbria then, because clearly there was a lot of work that you've done, and there appears to be a lot of acceptance for this approach.
Yes, I would say they're pushing it forward. It's an interesting one, though, because if you think about stabilization and you sort of talk about a sort of formal, uniformed environment, you think about the army and you think about stabilization in terms of conflict resolution. And that's where the word has tended to trip off the tongue for the last few decades. Stabilization is necessarily put about controlling a conflict zone. So bringing into this other environment may be challenging, and it is challenging. I have been challenged by people in the Cabinet Office about whether it's appropriate or not. But as defined and as experienced, as I've seen it experienced, certainly through flooding, it's totally appropriate for the cycle to be included in the cycle, because it's honest and it provides a communication point.
And do you see it more as a there seems to be a clear definition? Blue light services do the response, you know, local authorities, et al., do the recovery. Do you see a particular lead in this area, or is it is it community led as well? Is, you know, how do you see this being organized in a particular way that is recognized by not just agencies but the general public and their expectation of public agencies in an emergency? Where do you see the lead in the development of stabilization?
Generally, as you look at the strategic coordination group, the tactical coordination group, that they're activated for a big bang for when it happens, and they're dealing very quickly with response. As you start patching things together again, that you're looking at this transition into a recovery and keeping things safe and preventing the need to come back into response. But that is very much the broader congregation. That's not the three blue lights and whoever they choose to invite to the table. That's all the responders plus the rest of society. So it's very much the sort of recovery coordination group step, that transition period, that's when it's starting to operate. So whoever would be running the recovery coordination group would be thinking in terms of managing the stabilization.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And I think it naturally sits in sort of like the non-blue light services, in my view, because I think there's a political dimension here. There's clearly a community resilience stroke, community cohesion and confidence issue here. Let's give you a bit of a magic wand now in terms of stabilization, because it's clearly a subject that you're passionate about. And certainly with folks like me, see the logic of it and the opportunity to explore the concept as being formally part of integrated emergency management. Where do you think the debate should go now? Where do you think we should be looking at this. Should it be as part of a planned review of the Civil Contingencies Act or the way that we've dealt with the pandemic or a combination of two? Where do you see the concept going?
I think if you're looking at the way civil contingencies, emergency planning, whatever, is resilience, to put it, the big umbrella over it in this country is organized, then you are looking at the Cabinet Office and the Civil Contingencies Secretariat to be setting the track for lead government departments to be thinking about this. I'm working with the Department of Transport at the moment, and I'm strongly encouraging them to accept that they need to think about stabilization as part of it. So that's a middle tier up. That's me from that's Cumbria's experience at the bottom, pushing through the middle tier at DfT up towards Cabinet Office to think about it and to have it start being put into doctrine.
That's been a really interesting conversation, and what I hope it has done is to explain, you know, I think a very reasonable concept to be included in the doctrine. I really do, and I very much hope this has promoted some debate in this particular area as well. I mean, have you found others that have been particularly supportive of this? You know, I don't want you to sort of name names or people or individuals, but have you found that this is being accepted in some areas as something that we should be taking forward?
I think generally there's an acceptance that it's a useful concept. It's just, it's, as you said before, it's the next steps and getting that push from the people who write the doctrine.
Okay. Well, listen, thanks for that. With all my guests, I ask them to impart, before they go, impart what I call some pearls of foresight. Some pearls of foresight. A bit like pearls of wisdom, but if you were to give some pearls of foresight in the area of emergency management, perhaps stabilisation, anything in your academic area, what sort of pearls of foresight would you give, say, to public authorities, small businesses, to individuals, anyone that you think, yeah, do you know what, in my experience, really think about this before it happens?
The obvious one for me is, I mean, I've been working with this for best part of 20 years now myself, and it's the fact that you can call it recovery, but my God, recovery is slow, and it involves stages and a roller coaster ride. I mean, if we think back to my work on the Hull floods with Becky Whittle and Will Med, I mean, it's that roller coaster ride over the months and years that follow an event. You can't just crunch that together in a return to normal. I mean, that's the pearl of wisdom. You have to accept that recovery is difficult.
Yeah, and evolving as well. Yeah. Okay. Dr. Hugh Deeming from HD Research Limited, thank you very much indeed for your time today. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you, David.
So I very much hope that you enjoyed that podcast and our guest, Dr. Hugh Deeming, very kindly talking about this concept of stabilisation. If you want to get in contact with us, it's david@foresightsolutions.net. Check out our website, foresightsolutions.net, and the Contact Us tab. Twitter, our handle is @foresightsol. Hashtag Foresight Matters Podcast, or check out our Facebook and LinkedIn profile pages, and just search for Foresight Solutions and look out for our logo. Stay safe, and I look forward to welcoming you again on another Foresight Matters.
You've been listening to Foresight Matters, an independent podcast presented and produced by Foresight Solutions Limited. To find out how we can help your company or organization, visit our website at foresightsolutions.net.